On Friday, we spoke about the advantages of creating some wet spaces in our gardens to encourage natural wildlife and natural predators for some of our pests. But this isn't the only advantage to having a pond or some other wet area. We can also use it to grow food for us. Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 62 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today we're going to be talking about some aquatic plants that we can grow for food, and there really is quite a selection available. There's all sorts of things that we can grow for their tubers, their leaves, for salads, and everything in between. And we're going to be talking about lots and lots of different varieties of plants that you can consider. We're also going to be talking in the next episode about how we can structure our pond and how we can create the right environments for all sorts of different plants. So today's episode is going to be a run-through of some ideas of different plants that you might want to consider growing. And Wednesday's episode is going to be talking about how we can create and shape and adapt our ponds to give us the option of growing all these different plants within them. So it's going to be a two-part episode on a theme, first focused on species and, options, and the second one focused on how we can create the soil environments and things like that that we're going to want. Before we get stuck in today, I just wanted to give a shout out to our latest Patreon subscriber, Deb from Australia. Thank you so much, so much. Really am touched every time someone decides to contribute to the show in that way. It really does make a huge difference, and I just wanted to read out the message you sent us. Hi, Carl. Greetings from Australia. I've been listening to your podcast since discovering it and really enjoying watching your journey. I'm also watching on YouTube. We live in the Yarra Valley in Victoria, Australia, and hope to be able to buy a small place of our own in the next 5 years. For now, we're growing what we can, where we can, and learning new skills with food growing and preservation. We have built a chook tractor and plan to get some chickens in the spring. We hope to become more self-reliant, if not completely self-sufficient, by the time we retire in 5 years. We're in our 60s and looking forward to spending the next 20 years truly living and providing for ourselves and sharing our abundance with our adult daughters and their families. Keep up the great work, providing interesting and useful content. Best wishes to you and your family. Stay safe and take care, Deb and Jeff. Well, thank you so much for your kind words, and they really are appreciated. So thank you, Deb and Jeff, for supporting the show. It makes a huge difference. So let's now get into the meat of today's episode. And as I mentioned, we're talking about edible plants that we can grow in and around our ponds. So let's start with sweet flag. Now, sweet flag is a native of Europe. It's growing naturalized in Britain and lots of other places. It's quite happy in most soils, and it tends to grow in the shallow areas around the edges of ponds. The rhizomes are what you would harvest and eat in either the August or the spring. They're lovely and edible and can be used as a substitute for ginger or cinnamon or nutmeg or things like that. In the past, people have also candied the rhizomes and used them to make sweetmeats and things of that nature. The inner portion of the young stems, if you strip the outside, can be eaten raw, just like a bamboo shoot might be. And the young leaves can also be picked and cooked in the same way you would cook spinach. The mature leaves can also act as an insect repellent. Next up, we have a native of South Africa. Now, this is a plant that has also occasionally naturalized itself in Britain. In case you're wondering, the reason I'm mentioning that is because although this plant is from South Africa, and that sort of gives you an indication as to where it's happy living, you know, it's going to be happy in much warmer climates than the UK, I'm focusing on plants that have naturalized in the UK so that it shows you that they're available in temperate climates and in climates that aren't necessarily as warm as they might have originally came from. So I'm trying to offer as many cold hardy plants as possible to give you that extra variety. So Cape pondweed, it's a plant that's grown quite often ornamentally in ornamental ponds, and it does better in slightly deeper water, so slightly further in from the outside of your pond, from sort of 6 inches to considerably deeper, you know, several feet deep. But it does like a rich soil. We're going to be talking about soil in the next episode and how we can achieve whatever it is we're trying to achieve to grow the plants we want. And Cape pondweed, again, it's the tubers that you're going to be eating, and also the flowering spikes, which you can use in the same way you would use spinach. You can now support the show directly. Just go to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. You can become a patron and set up to donate to the show from any amount. Pledging as little as $3 a month makes a huge difference. If that's not your thing, you can also support the show by sharing it with people you know or posting about it on social media. We really appreciate all the help that you give us. It's people like you that make this show possible. Botrymus umbellatus is our next plant, the flowering rush. It's native to Britain, so it's going to be quite comfortable in a cooler climate. It grows in moist soil around a pond or in the pond itself, right down to, you know, a foot or so deep. It's going to be quite happy. The tubers are, again, the edible part of the plant, and they contain over 50% starch. So they're going to be a really substantial part of a meal. They're only edible when cooked. You can't eat them raw, but you can also harvest the seeds, which are also edible on this plant. The next one is a common one a lot of you will have heard of, and that's golden saxifrage. And it's another plant that's native to this part of the world. And they grow around ponds in wet meadows, swamps and places like that. They do probably do better with a little bit more shade than some other plants. So they're a great plant to use if you've got an area of wet soil that is also shady and you're struggling for something to think about growing there, then golden saxifrage is a great choice because you can eat the leaves cooked as a vegetable like a spinach, but you can also eat them raw in salads and things. So again, like a spinach. So they're a great choice for those areas that might not necessarily lend themselves to other plants. The next one is one of my favourite plants in the world, and I'm so keen on this plant that I've dedicated an entire podcast to it, and that is watercress, Nasturtium officinale. And it's another native of Britain, and it's such a familiar plant to so many of us. We're already growing it, or we've bought it in the supermarket and we eat it regularly. It's so versatile in so many different ways. We love it as a salad, but you can also cook with it and make soups with it. You can forage for it and propagate it simply by throwing it in your pond. You don't need to go and buy seeds or buy a plant. It's just a fantastic plant in so many different ways. So you can get yours by literally just buying it in a supermarket or a greengrocer's and propagate it from there, or you can go and forage it, or you can obviously buy the plant or seeds online. It's going to prefer shallow water, and anything from, you know, almost no depth at all to a few inches deep, it's going to be perfect. You can also find it growing on marshy ground around water, and it's going to really take hold quite quickly and easily with very little work. So you can grow it in a small container. If you're not going down the route of making a pond and all you're doing is you're creating birdbath style water areas in sunken containers in the ground, then watercress is definitely something that you can be growing in those environments. It doesn't need a big pond. It's quite happy almost anywhere. So as well as its leaves being lovely and edible, you can also use its seeds as a substitute for mustard seeds. So it really is right near the top of my list. Next up is another plant that is frequently grown as an ornamental, and that is the yellow water lily. I'm trying to think how to pronounce the Latin name. I think it's Nuphea lutea. I'm not great on my Latin names. I'm certainly not a botanist, so please feel free to correct me on that. But I think it's Nuphea lutea. And it's another native of Britain. It grows in water anything up to about 2 feet deep. It wants a little bit of depth, so sort of between 1 and 2 foot. And this is a plant that's going to really enjoy the sunshine, so try and give it a full sun position. And again, on this plant, the roots are edible. You can eat them raw or cooked. You can also eat the leaf stalks. You can also use the flowers to make a tea. And there's just so many uses for it, and it's often overlooked as an edible because it's so prolific as an ornamental plant. There are similar species that are native to North America, and that would be the Nuphea adventa and the Nuphea polysepala, I think is pronounced. And again, they're often grown in ornamental ponds and can be used in similar ways. You can also eat the seeds, and you can ground them up to use them as thickeners like you would corn flour. You can find Self-Sufficient Hub content elsewhere online in lots of other places. We have a YouTube channel, we also have our website, and now there's our Facebook page and Facebook group. Links to all of these you can find in the show notes. Come check us out. So next up is the common reed, another native of Britain, Phragmites australis, or Phragmites communis. And this one will grow in shallow waters and wet soils, and it will grow really quite tall. It will grow 3 meters or so tall. So if you've got a small garden, it might not be perfect, but you can also use it to create shade. If you need shade or windbreak material, then this could fit the bill. It's a member of the grass family. There is something to be very wary of, though, is that it can be very invasive. So you do need to bear that in mind when you're considering planting of it. But these problems can be outweighed by just the number of uses this plant has. It really is a super impressive plant. The roots are edible, and you can dry them and grind them and use them to make things like porridge. And they contain 5% sugar, which is just, you know, great. It's a fantastic thing to know. There's very little out there that contains that much sugar. So it's one of the few that does. The young shoots you can eat raw, and you can also cook them, and you can also eat the seeds. There's also another way of extracting sugar from the plant by damaging the stem. It actually exudes a sugary substance, much like if you damage a pine tree, you get the pine sap that you can have access to. It works in a similar way, but it's not a similar product. You can eat this sugary substance that exudes from the plant because it hardens up just like pine sap when it comes in contact with the air, and you can eat this raw or roasted. And even the inner stem can be moistened and roasted to make something similar to a marshmallow. So it's just got some amazing virtues, and it can be used also in for thatching. So if you have some outbuildings maybe that you were looking to grow your own thatch for, this would be a great plant to do that with. Because of its invasive nature, you're going to be able to really butcher it and take a lot of harvesting from it, and it's still going to come back and spread. So it's also a great plant for use in basket making. You can also use it to make a green dye. There's just so many uses that the utility of the plant might outweigh the downside of its invasive nature. So just give it some careful consideration, but if those are all things that you think you're going to find uses for, then it might be well worth investing some time and effort in nurturing this plant and containing it. Next up is another plant that I get very excited about, and that is arrowheads, Sagittaria latifolia, otherwise known as duck potatoes. I get excited about them for lots of different reasons. First of all, they grow wild, so you can forage for them. They're a native to North America, but they grow all over temperate regions of the world and warmer places. They look after themselves. They're such a hardy plant. Whenever I think of plants that we grow in our garden that you can forage for, I just get excited, because by the very nature of them, they're going to be so low maintenance. They're just going to take care of themselves. Another reason that I get so excited about this plant is because they're a great alternative to potatoes, and growing staple foods like potatoes, rice, cereals, things like that. I love having as many options as possible that are easy to grow, and this is definitely one of them. And they've got, I don't know if I've already mentioned this, but this lovely nutty potato flavor. You peel them and you can roast them or boil them, and they're just, you know, they just tick so many boxes for me. The flavor, ease of growing, the fact you can forage for them, so you don't even need to buy seeds to get yourself established. They're just a great plant. Next up is water spinach, and sometimes you hear this called morning glory. The Latin name, I believe, is Ipomoea aquatica. You can find this in Asian supermarkets and Asian food stores, and it's got a spinach-like growth at the top. And you can literally buy a bunch of these in an Asian food store, and you can propagate them yourself in water, in a vase in your house or out in your pond. They're going to root after just a week or two, so you can root them in a vase and then plant them out into soil, or you can just use your pond and try and do it directly. It's going to need at least 20 centimeters of water to grow in, so at least 8 inches or so. You can also grow it from seeds, which you can buy. Now, it's a Asian plant, and it's a staple crop out there. It does need fairly warm conditions, so it's going to struggle when our temperatures get down in the winter under 10 degrees or so. So if you're growing it outside, it's a bit of a gamble, but you can use an equivalent of a greenhouse and basically use an old fish tank and sort of turn that upside down to create a greenhouse space in the side of your pond. And that can actually help to give you a chance of getting this through the winter if you live in a temperate environment. So we're not going to go into aquacultures and sort of more advanced systems today. We're just talking about a few plants that you can simply grow in a pond. There's lots of different methods and systems that we can add complexity to our water systems, but that's not really the topic of today's episode, but it will be the topic of a future one. We're going to get into all sorts of heated systems and systems that require pumps and ways of growing our plants in water alongside growing meat and fish and things like that as well. But that's not today's episode. Today is purely a rundown of some of the plants that you can consider. it's really easy for you to get in touch with us. You can do it either by sending an email to selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com or by using the link in the show notes to send us a voice message. You can send us a voice message just using your phone. You could also reach out to us on Facebook, where we have the Self-Sufficient Hub group and the Self-Sufficient Hub page. We're always thrilled to get your feedback, questions, or suggestions for future topics on the show. Okay, we've got our last three plants for you now, and we're going to start with something called brookweed. So this is another native of Britain. It's a leafy green type plant. It grows in wet soil around the edges of ponds and also in shallow water around the edges of ponds. And the young leaves can be eaten much like spinach or watercress, just raw, or you can cook them. The Latin name is Semolus velarandi. And it's another plant that is really easy to look after. It gives a lot of cover, so it can complement some other life that might live in the pond by offering that shade around the edges of the pond where they can hide from their predators. Next one, and this is a huge bushcraft plant, is the bulrush, Scirpus lacustris, I believe. And it's another native of Britain, and it grows in bogs or shallow pond margins. Now, you can eat the edible roots. You can eat them raw or dried, and you can also grind them up and use them as flour. You can use the young shoots that grow in spring to eat as well. It's another one of those plants where you can use the more established plants, the leaves, for weaving and making mats and things like that from. And also the tip of the plant, the seed head, is also a fantastic fire starter. If you're going to want to use something as kindling, it makes a great tinder for use for starting fires. So it's a great bushcraft plant. Next up is burreed, B-U-R. Reed, and it's another native of Britain that grows in marshes and wet ditches and shallow edges of ponds. It's something that does require a slightly richer soil than some others if it's really going to thrive, and it's another plant where it's the tuber that you're going to eat. Now, a lot of these reed type plants where you're going after the tuber, they are probably going to do better in your bigger, your larger ponds, where you're not going to have to worry about a lining being pierced right near the surface, because these plants are going to be quite vigorous below the ground. Next up, and it's another favourite from a culinary point of view, and that is the water chestnut, Trapper natans. And we are all probably familiar with water chestnut from Asian cooking, where it's a native plant. It's also native to the Mediterranean, but it's hardy in almost all temperate areas as well. So it isn't one that's naturalized in the wild in Britain, or at least I'm not familiar with that being the case. But it's a plant that, apart from some of the really coldest parts of Britain, the northernmost reaches of Scotland, it's going to be hardy and grow as a perennial. So it likes fairly deep water, up to about 2 feet deep, so not super deep, but not right near the edges. And the seed, which is about 50% starch, can be eaten raw. You can also cook it, or you can again dry it and grind it and use into flour. It's usually propagated and cultivated purely for its seed in Asia. And, you know, we've all eaten water chestnuts. They're that lovely, crunchy addition to so many of the Asian dishes that we're familiar with. And finally, the last one is the small reed mace. And the reed mace, these are another two reeds that are native to Britain. And they grow everywhere that you're familiar with seeing reeds. So again, around pond margins. And if you really want to be self-sufficient, then these are going to be near the top of your wish list. So try and think of somewhere you can incorporate these, but bear in mind that, again, they can be invasive. So whenever I think about invasive plants, if they're ones I've got a use for, you need to use that as a sort of a double-edged sword. So invasive means they might get where you don't want them. And that's our job. That's our job as the custodians of the land. But I look at that as a positive insofar as it means that they're going to just do well. They're not going to need a lot of attention. They're not going to need a lot of commitment to keep alive. They're going to do well. The place they're going to be invasive is within the pond. So if you've got space, it might be worth dedicating a small pond area to this plant because they're so useful, because they can overrun a pond. They're uses is the list of uses is just so impressive, and I've no idea why you don't see them sold more often. You eat the rhizomes, either cooked or dried and ground into flour. The young shoots you can eat, and they can be used almost like asparagus. The base of the larger mature stems you can use, and again, raw or cooked. You'd want to strip that. It's the inside of that stem that you're eating. The seeds are edible, which you can roast, and they taste nutty. You can also extract oil from them, from the seeds. The uses, there's just an almost endless list of uses from this plant. You can also use the leaves from the mature plants to weave with again and make mats and things like that. And I've also heard of the hairs from the fruits, if you like, are used as a stuffing material to make pillows. You can make paper from the stems. I don't know how you do that, but I've read online that people can use the stems to make a pulp and make paper with. And people have also used the dried flowers as an insulation. So there's just an endless list of uses for this plant. And I'm sure down the line when, because I actually have a source of these very close to our home, in our neighbor's pond. Our neighbor has a huge pond and he's granted me access to it for harvesting things like this. So in future, as I become more and more familiar with this plant, I'm sure they will warrant their own episode at some point down the road. But they're just one of those plants that they come with the caveat of being invasive. But even with that caveat, I think they're definitely one to consider. So there you go, food for thought, lots and lots of options out there. So once you've got your wet space, your pond, there's nothing holding you back to get it planted with some really useful and edible crops. Best of luck, and I will speak to you on Wednesday. Bye bye. If you find this podcast valuable, there's several ways you can support it. The easiest of which is to rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts. You could also talk about it or share it wherever you post online, including your social media pages. And now you can support the podcast directly by becoming a patron at patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, we really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. See you soon.